check all these. There are too many things to turn on here. That one's on. Hello. I think I sent people an email about an intern position at Bristol-Myers. You didn't get that? Did you get one? How strange. I must have used the wrong email address. Sorry? From me? Well, I apologize. I'll resend it. So there is an intern position available at Bristol-Myers starting tomorrow, I think, for people well trained in this course. So if you're interested, email me. So I will find the email which somehow I must have missent or didn't send properly. I'll do that after the class. Which microphone is bad? This one? So, what I wanted to start off on these foils, I wanted to note that I added a set of examples. Did you put a link to these examples? Okay, so these examples are linked to directly on the home page. And illustrate up a dozen different Perl commands, and so if you go to this page, you'll find that you can do the following things. You can choose an example. Here we're illustrating Hello World. And when you illustrate looking at Hello World, you can either look at the essentially just the program. That gives you a listing of the program, which is the Perl program. And this Perl program is set up as a CGI script. So this is a Perl program that prints Hello World when invoked as a CGI script. So the actual Perl command that does hello world is actually just this one line here, which prints out hello world inside a print statement with a variable $hero, which was read in. If you want to see how to use it, you go to this thing saying run, and then you print your favorite name here. And then when you submit it, it prints out at the bottom here the result of the program, which is, here's the data, and then if you inspect that, this is the program. So this might be useful. So, and you can get this in a, say, in a better format by printing that, giving that button called prog. So anyway, this is directly linked in presumably some transparent fashion to the page. Now, before I get started on the lecture, there's one other. There are various examples here. one of the things I discussed last time was associative arrays, and there is an example, and the example I tried to describe was the example of using an associative array to process a mail file, which is in so-called MIME format, which is a value, a colon, sorry, a key, a value, a key, a colon, then a value. Well, it's not surprising, the battery fell out. So, you meant to have told me this before, because it obviously wasn't working from the beginning. This particular program here, which is again a CGI script, reads a file called mail header, and it actually, I described in words last time, a magic matching command that extracted everything before a colon and everything after a colon. And then it stored everything in an associative array here called mail input. So you might wish to inspect this stuff here, which this says not find everything which is not a scan for at least one character which is not a colon, then the rest. Start at the beginning of the line, that's a caret. Go to the end of the line, that's a dollar. Then we save the key in the right-hand side from $1 and $2. Then we do some standard cleanup by removing blank spaces at the beginning and the beginning and end of the right-hand side. We remove any blanks in the key, and we convert the key to lowercase because that's what's conventional. And then we store the thing in an associative array, where the argument of the associative array is this key. So this is a classic way of processing all data, which is of that form, key value. And then if you try to run this program, it will actually list it will just print out all the keys, and the data allows you to see if a particular key is there. So if you want to see if the key Fred is there, let's submit that query. Oh, it says that Fred does not exist. So it uses the Perl function exists to see whether a particular key is defined. If I try the key 2, then it will say that the value, the right-hand side for 2 is the word receiver. So that one exists. So if you inspect this Perl program, which is here, you will see there's a test to see but it's called left-hand side, really should be right-hand side anyway. This left-hand thing, which is, this is the thing read in, it tests to see if it exists. If it exists, it prints it out. Otherwise, it prints out a message saying it doesn't exist. All right, so that illustrates that. Now we get on to FOIL 45. 445 was, I think, where we got up to before, and it's the end of the regular expression substitution. And I guess I forgot to say, if you go to this page, you have a choice here from this menu of which one you want to look at. So we looked at associative array and hello world. This one is called the substitution. If you want to know what they do, you go here, which is a help page, which you can't see because it's the wrong font. If we go back to run for substitute. So this particular substitute page, which I won't bother to explore, it allows you to feed in an arbitrary regular expression and get Perl to evaluate that regular expression. And so you can experiment with all sorts of regular expressions to see what the answer. It allows you to feed in an original line, the first pattern to test for, the thing to replace for, and some modifiers, which are these things like G for global and I for any case. And so if you feed all those in, which you do here, well, here's some preset ones that work. If you submit it, it will tell you what the original line is, it'll tell you what the substitution is, and then it will tell you what these magic variables pre-match, match, and post-match are for this particular example. So this is meant to help you learn about the substitute command. And if you, again, you might find this Perl program itself, which is a legal CGI script, which, because this is running as a CGI script, as a useful thing. This particular Perl program is one that will give you great pleasure, because probably, if you were ingenious, you can delete the entire MPAC file system using this Perl program. At least I hope you can't, but it uses a strategy which is notable for allowing people to delete the MPAC file system, and that's because it uses a Perl command called eval. Eval, which we actually discussed, I think, in JavaScript, it means the same in Perl and JavaScript. It effectively allows you to take an alphanumeric string, which you construct from Perl variables, and then hand it to the Perl interpreter. And so the way that you have to, in order to do what I want, you have to use the eval command. Unfortunately, if you were a nasty person, you would have noticed that instead of inserting a substitute command, you could have ingeniously inserted some semicolons to end the instruction, do an rm star to remove the entire file system, and another, and effectively embed a Trojan horse inside the eval command. So I have asked the systems people to remove write permission from the CGI script. And meanwhile, as I know that you're all dying to remove the files, this particular script tests for semicolons in the input string and removes them. So I don't think you can delete my files. But if you think you can, I'd be grateful for you to tell me, because then I'll put that test in the script to stop it. But the only safe thing to do is to make this. Anyway, this illustrates security problems with the web, because it shows if you have programs running as CGI scripts, it is possible to. You have to be very careful that those programs cannot innocently have buried in them things that you don't want. And so this is the simplest example, I think, of such a. I mean, if you read the security. The FAQ, this is the example they give as the best example of how to violate web security. That's before you do the removal of semicolons. The example they give which violates security has semicolons to break this eval string into separate commands, so there can be a nasty command embedded in the middle. So. All right, so there we are.
Are there other restrictions for the CGI
No, there are no restrictions. That's the trouble. You can do anything you like. Oh, well, there are restrictions if... Well, it obeys the rules of Unix. So if you're running with a certain ownership, you have the restrictions of that, of whatever that owner has. So actually, even if you put rm star in the middle of this script, you wouldn't actually be able to delete very much, because it turns out this particular owner of this particular server doesn't own very much, and you'll find it quite hard to find out what it does own, because it doesn't own it. It doesn't actually own the CGI script. The CGI script is owned by me, and the server's running as somebody else. So in writing CGI scripts, I've always found it very tiresome to find out about ownership, because the ownership is often not what you expect. Because the ownership is the ownership of the CGI script has the permissions, I believe, of the server. And you need to know what the server's permissions are, because they're not typically you, because you are not the server. And so when you prepare a Perl script, that Perl script itself is not owned by the server, it's owned by you, and therefore, and probably the directory, so you have to look into it, you have to be very knowledgeable about how all your permissions are set up before you can know what works. Of course, what means, because when I'm doing it, what I do is I change the ownership of all my files to 777, which means everybody can read and write them, because I can't be bothered to work out who owns all these files. So, of course, that's the trouble with these security arrangements. If they get too tiresome, people do insecure things to avoid them. But that's the only problem I've had, unless Nancy and Mehmet have set this server up particularly obnoxiously. My only problem has been being careful to know who owns what file. But this Perl script certainly runs system commands, because it runs the date just for no particular reason. Most of these Perl scripts print out the date, which they access by running the Unix date command. So anyway, hopefully this resource, properly used, can teach you a little bit about CGI scripts and a little bit about Perl. So I think I'm going to go back. I'm just going to just do a little bit of fiddling here. I believe we're now coming back to where we started, which is split and join. Did we do? I don't think we did this last time. So maybe we. I think we. Well, anyway, even if we did, I'll do it now. So split and join are extremely useful, and split is used to break a string up into parts. If you go to this online Perl resource, although it's not referenced here, you'll find the split is used in my example on sorting, because the sorting example allows you to input a string separated by commas, and you will see I then use split to break up that string separated by commas into individual items. So substring does... is essentially the same as the command called, with a similar command in JavaScript and Java. It has a somewhat different syntax, because in Java or JavaScript, substring will be spelled substring, and it will be a method attached to the object called string. So you'd write string.substring in Java or JavaScript. In Perl, the first argument where you don't have this that type of, or at least in Perl 4, you don't have that type of object-oriented syntax, the first argument of substring is the string number, and then the next two arguments are the indices. And again, in Java and JavaScript, you specify the beginning and end index. In Perl, you specify the beginning index and the length. All right. So there's an example to illustrate substring. And so there's a string which says this script illustrates Perl function substring or substra, and the starting number is 24 and the length is 4. So if we submit that program, it writes out the string. It even gives you a little numbering at the bottom, so this is 5, so that's 24 there, and the substring extracted from location 24 of length 4 is called Perl, because that's P-E-R-L of location 24 through 27. If you want to agree to do another testing, you have to use the back command in Netscape. So if you wanted a thing of length 7, you could change that to 7, and it should give you Perl space FU as the thing it extracts. So that's substring. And there's this peculiar syntax which allows you to take a substring out and then replace it by putting substring on the left-hand side, not the right-hand side. So $new equals substring of the three arguments, set $new equal to the extracted substring. Substring of the three arguments equals $new replaces those locations in the string by the value $new. So that's illustrated in the notes by replacing CPS 600 by CPS 616. Alright. So, Perl, you say the main problem I have with all these languages, they always define, these are all relatively similar languages, they have slightly different syntaxes for the same construct. So functions are called sub in Perl, presumably as a sop to Fortran, and also you do not in Java or JavaScript you would have the arguments after the subroutine name. In Perl you just have the curly brackets, so you have sub, name of the subroutine, curly brackets, then all the stuff the subroutine does, and you end curly brackets. And in separate functions in Perl, just return a list. They cannot return anything else but a list. And if you typically want to invoke a subroutine in Perl, you used to have the and sign in front of the subroutine name. As long as it's unambiguous, that is optional in Perl 5. The and sign is an option. But in Perl 4, it was required. Alright. So I had a simple example in this so here we have an example which was of a classic subroutine. So I put this example because this is a very useful subroutine which you should copy to all your web processing programs. So it's called 2HTML. And whenever you're doing HTML processing, you need to, and you have some text you want to put in your next favorite HTML page, you have to remember that you're not that a less than and a greater sign and a quote and an and sign have special meaning in HTML. So you need to change those characters to their HTML equivalent, which for an and sign is and amp, for an ampersand sign is and amp colon, for a less than sign it's ampersand l less colon. So this subroutine here is an example of a subroutine where you have one argument, which is the line you wish to convert, the syntax for extracting the argument of a subroutine is illustrated, and you should always use such a syntax. If you have a bunch of arguments, your first command in your subroutine should say my, the list of the arguments separated by commas equals, what is this thing? That's a, what? At, yeah, so it's the at sign followed by an underbar. So the at underbar is the array, namely the list that holds the list of all the arguments. So my dollar conv line equals at underbar set dollar conv line to be the only argument. So then we see if it's null, we return. Otherwise, we just do four substitution commands, which test for these magic HTML characters, replace them by the HTML equivalent. We put a G to do it for all possible occurrences in the line, and then the last line of the subroutine is $conv line. Because the subroutine returns the last value produced in the subroutine, and so you can either write return $conv line that returns with that, or else, as you want to be, to show you're a very elegant, beautiful programmer who likes to write cryptic code, you leave out the return statement and just write what you want, and because you know that gives the same answer. If that happens, so this last command here was $conv line equals $a dot $b, you could have just left it as that because that returns that string. The substitute command does not return the string, it returns the result of the substitution, which is definitely not what you want to return. So you just write that. Yes? Two ampersands? You'd have to show it to me. I don't know what that means. Well, it's some magic Perl syntax. I'm not certain what it is. I'm sorry. Perl has a lot of cryptic things you can do which I do not remember. Alright, so the only thing that that we probably basically described enough about functions. Let me just discuss a little bit about local and my. So local and my, you saw me use them at that first command of the subroutine. So local and my are Perl's way of restricting the scope of a variable. I mean, if you just write, if you just define a variable, that variable is, unless you do anything, is defined throughout the Perl program and is essentially globally known. So if you write $Fred equals 2, $Fred is known to every Perl program, every function in the whole of that program, so it's a global variable. Often you do not, I mean, it's bad programming practice to have too many global variables because things start obviously writing over each other. So the way you restrict the scope of a variable is with the either the my command or the local command. So Perl fall only had local. Local has the restricts the scope of the variable inside local to be the whatever function it's defined in and all functions called by that function. Now that's typically not what you want. You want it to be restricted in scope to the function and not passed to all called functions. So my, they introduce, so rather than change the meaning of local, because that was hallowed by tradition in Perl 4, they introduced a new command called my. My, if you do use my, anything inside the parentheses is has a scope, which is the scope of that function. So it's the best way to define variables which have well-defined scope. The other thing to notice is you can use my inside any so-called statement block, namely inside any curly bracket. So if you have a for command for some loop, curly brackets, you can say my local variable equal my local variable comma next local variable comma so on. So my can be used inside any block and it restricts the scope to that block, namely to the corresponding matching curly bracket. So my can be used totally generally. It is not just in functions. Functions just happen to be have natural scope defined by the braces that define a function. So I essentially never use local. I always use my. So I don't think this example here shows anything more than that add-on example I showed you. All right. So in some language, so that there are a couple of useful, which are useful operators here, which are less than, equal than, greater than, and it's a binary operator. So you have one variable before and one variable after, and it returns minus one, zero, or one, depending on whether the first variable is less than, greater than, less than, equal to, or greater than the second variable. Perl has an identical operator called CMP, which does the same thing for string-wise comparisons. So if you want to test whether a string lies before another string, is identical to another string, or lies after another string in the standard string ordering syntax, then you use CMP. Note, remember, all the comparison operators in Perl were different for numbers than they were for strings, and that had to be true because Perl doesn't type any of its variables. So Perl does not know whether $A is a number or a string until you tell it what type of operator it goes into. So it's essential. Remember I mentioned JavaScript had slight trouble in that regard. Java gets around it by typing the variables. Perl gets around it by typing the operator. So we use this in this, the simplest example of its use is this sorting routine. And the sorting routine is pretty flexible in Perl. So the function sorts, it takes as argument one list and returns another list, and you're allowed to, and it's, and that list is then sorted sorted by string-wise comparisons. It does the classic string-wise ordering it, so that A lies before B and so on. And the general syntax for sort is a little peculiar. It is that you start with the sort, you then define the method that's going to be used for the sorting, and then you give the list which needs to be sorted. And the thing in this block is either a subroutine name or some legal Perl which returns minus one, which returns either the alphanumeric or the string-wise comparison. So here's an example. Supposing this array stored people's names, and we built up our database, and we had an associative array called percent age with values dollar age of somebody's name, which were people's ages. So dollar age of dollar A was the numeric age of the person whose name was dollar A. So this array has people's names in it. So if we define a sorting criteria, which is that the age of dollar A, which returns either minus 1, 0, or 1, according to whether the age is of dollar A is less than, equal to, or greater than dollar B, this command here will sort the array according to the age of the people's names in that array. So the magic thing you have to remember is that you must call the arguments dollar A and dollar B. So essentially, the Perl sort routine calls a function to do the sort, which has arguments dollar A and dollar B, which are, and then it requires you to specify that function. So here's another example. If we want to sort backwards, we define a subroutine called backsort, which ingeniously, instead of saying dollar A comparison operator dollar B, says dollar B comparison operation dollar A, and as it gives the argument, that will then sort backwards, because I have the opposite. I'm returning minus 1, 0, 1 according to dollar B is less than, equal to, or greater than dollar A. So if we go to, and so you can write rather general sorting things in this. If you go to the example, so here's actually where we use the split command. Alright, so here's the example, which you probably can't see this. This is just a bunch of, here's the array, which is actually the numbers 10 through 1, separated by commas. You're allowed to choose the four ways of sorting, and we'll choose forward sort by characters, and then we submit the sort. It tells you the number of entries in 10, the original order is the backward numbers, and the sorted order is 1, 10, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, because 10 lies before 2 if you sort it alphabetically. If I'd instead sorted by forward number and submitted it, we would have found the answer is 1 through 10. So you can hand it to the... So if you now look at this program, so it shows you how to do this type of stuff. So here we can see in red the split. This is a very standard way of doing it. This is your classic CGI script, and my particular version of the CGI parsing program stores everything in associative arrays. This is the thing which is defined in the name attribute of the HTML form. And so here's that string, which is an array. This is the method defined by the menu, and the menu's name is called sort method. Then the first thing I do is take the split command, the regular expression I hand to the split command is backslash s star, comma, backslash s star. So that says any number of white space, comma, any number of white space. So this is a way of doing sorting where what you're sorting is split by commas, but you're allowed any amount of blanks and what have you. And then it will just store the result in a real array. So split is very useful. So split immediately forms an array out of this single line string. And then we actually have the versions of the sort, which have various various subroutines, which subroutine is stored by this testing on the method that we inputted. And then at the bottom of this thing, we have, there were four methods. I only have three subroutines because one of the methods is the default method, the forward character or string-wise. So I don't have that one. So that's the sort example. Good. All right, so here's another example of a useful thing. However, it's almost always only used in one case, the TR operator. So the TR operator does general translations. And as described in the book or this foil, there are a bunch of things it can translate. We can do very general translations. Essentially, the only translation I ever use is between upper and lower case. And so that is done by, the translation, the syntax of TR is the what you want to start with and what you want to end with. So TR, a little a through little z slash big A through big Z, translates all lowercase into all uppercase, and obviously you can do that vice versa. And you can also delete letters in this way because you can translate them into nothing. You can, so there are a whole set of options which may or may not be useful.